Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit.
What's good, Fatherhood? It's your boy, James Lopez, representing for the dope dads of the Fatherhood is Lit community. I work with many dads that are thriving, and some are going crazy trying to co-parent with their mother of the child. Well, with the mother of their child. Let me fix that. Today, I wanted to talk to someone that has spoken about this topic at TEDx and is always dropping gems on co-parenting. What's good, Joel?
Yo, my brother. What is good, homie? How you feeling? Good to talk to you, man.
Yo, people know you as everything. I didn't know if you wanted me to call you Joel Leong, Joel Daniels. Like, which one do you like, bro?
Nah. We homies, man. So you can call me Joel. For all artistic purposes, though, I've been going as Joel Leong as of late. It's my first and my middle name. It has a nice ring to it. My mom is happy that I'm using my name and I'm not using my rap name anymore. So as long as I'm using any name that she's given me, she doesn't care. So we get on that end.
Wait, she didn't like your rap name, bro? she wasn't feeling it?
My mom, listen, man, my mom would tell me every year, and like, you know, she a Caribbean, man, so she don't really be mentioned words for certain things. But she was like, you're never, verbatim, what she told me, was like, you're never going to get anywhere using that name. Not to say she was right, but she was kind of right. The minute I started using my real name, it's like the checks started coming in, the work started increasing. It's interesting. Parents be knowing, man.
Yo, parents know, man. So, you know, I wanted to get you on here. Like, at first I was like, damn, like, Joel knows a lot about women and like daughters, because you're a girl dad, right? And I'm a boy dad. So it was like, damn, like, how do we finesse this, right? And then I remember seeing your TED talk, and you talked about co-parenting, and I was like, damn, like, I get asked this all the time. And before we even started, you told me something really good about co-parenting that I hope you can reshare that real quick as to what you think co-parenting is.
Well, thank you for kind of bringing it up again, James. I mean, co-parenting really, I think it lives outside of just the normal ways we hold space for the conversation. Generally speaking, when we're thinking of co-parents, we're thinking of two individuals who are not together, right? So like even before we started this call, you know, whether that be a mother and father, two individuals who would consider themselves dad, non-binary, two moms, whatever the case is, but two people who are separated. And, you know, you were kind of telling me about your parents and the idea to me, and even with you and your wife, it's like you're co-parenting, right? Because it's really about the shared responsibility. And like the co-parenting model really exists even outside of those who consider themselves to be parents. I think guardians fall into that terminology. And even when we talk about guardians, teachers, aunts, uncles, elders in the community, grandparents, like whomever you consider a person who's showing up in that space as a responsible caregiver for a child. I think the co-parenting space really is speaking about a shared responsibility for creating safe boundaries for children, for creating spaces for growth and protection for the children in our community. And that applies to everyone. It's not just for two people who maybe didn't work out and now they're trying to figure out how to make it work for the sake of a child. It's everyone, I think, in the community has some level of co-parenting responsibility to do if they're choosing to show up in that way.
I mean, with that definition, right, in the perfect world, co-parenting between people that aren't together anymore would work perfectly, right? But that's not the case. Even for our website, you submitted an article that you called "Don't Call Her My Baby Mama," right? Like, please don't call her my baby mama. Yeah. Like, that leads me to believe that co-parenting starts with respect, right? Just from what you wrote there. Tell me more about that. Like, why is it that you don't want people calling her your baby mom? Because that's something that you and I from the Bronx, you know, we use that word like fluidly, right? Like it's easy. Yeah. It's right there at the tip of the tongue at all times.
Absolutely.
So how do you stay away from that?
I think that's a good question, man. And I think part of that is how I've just been trying to reframe the way I use language in general. Mm-hmm. You know, with everything that's kind of been happening now between the Black Lives Matter uprisings, between the pandemic, between all the things that we've been dealing with, like we've been kind of hit with an onslaught of new ways to show up in experiences and talk about them. And for me, and prior to this year, even, like, you know, it got to the point where it felt, anytime we talk about a baby moms or that's my baby daddy, there's a stereotype attached to that. You know, it's like a person that's kind of a person that's there strictly to be a parent. You know, when but at the end of the day, like Lila, my eldest, her mom is more than just her mom. She was a whole human being before she became a parent. And so giving her that, and she's more than a baby mother. She's my friend right now. We weren't friends, but you know, I think I consider her a friend. I consider her an ally, with regards to how it comes to when it comes to parenting. She's a woman. She's somebody's sister. She's somebody's daughter. Baby mama, and like even that, it's easy, right? It kind of explains and says what it needs to do. But for me, it's like the mother of my child is how I describe her, because that's part of the way that's the role that's one of the roles that she played. But I think when we think of baby moms and baby fathers, unfortunately, what comes to mind is literally, it's generally the person that's maybe the person you're going to court about, or the person that you don't fuck with no more, the person that you don't talk to, the person that you talk about disrespectfully amongst your circle of friends, men, women, whomever. And for me, I wanted to remove myself from that conversation and remove our parenting relationship from that situation, no matter how difficult it got. I didn't want to disrespect the space that she holds as a parent in a way that felt like it diminished it. And I think that term tends to diminish the role of a parent, because you're more than a baby mama. You're like a parent who's showing up for a child.
Yeah, and you're there constantly, like every day, every night. Yeah. You know, you're there for the craziest of times. So it's more than just that funny-ass title. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then even that, you know, like, and even if you have like a parenting, a custodial agreement with your child, if you're showing up, you know, and I feel like I've heard you say this, I've heard other dads say this, it's like it's the quality over the quantity. You know what I'm saying? Like the quality time that gets spent, even if it's just once a week, if it's two times a week, if you're showing up and with diligence and with intention for your child, like you're doing your part, because that stuff means something to your children. Speaking from the place of a person who, unfortunately, with my first daughter Lila, I was not there every day. I was there maybe 3-4 days out of the week, and it got to the point I was there 7-6 days out of the week. And because our parenting situation was a little unique, because that was without having any court, the courts involved, and we still paying a monthly, still giving her money a month, to trying to follow like New York City state guidelines, but showing up as a parent and showing up actively as a parent, it looks different for everybody. And I think that's important for fathers who are listening to understand, like, even if you can't physically be there because of whatever mandate has been set, it doesn't mean that you don't get to show up fully and like utilizing that time in a way that means something to that child. Like that makes all the difference. Like even if it's one day out of the week, even if it's 3 hours out of the week, children they don't forget shit, man.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit more, because that's very interesting. Like you know, you said 2 days a week, 3 days a week. For a lot of dads, like, the beginning of that, if they only have like 2 or 3 days, that must be a crazy like culture shock, right? What do you say to the dads that think that 2 days they can't make an impact?
Oh man, it's two hours makes an impact, because again, children remember the time. You know, like even when I think of Lila, you know, my children are still young, man. Like relatively, like I know, and a little younger than yours for sure. Like Lila's going to be 5 in November. Lila still talks about her birth. Like she brings up the museum party that I threw for her before her and her mother moved to Houston. She brings it up as if it happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. And granted, she was there with us for like, we spent the whole day together. But I think it's about maximizing the time. And like, it doesn't have to be big. I think sometimes we as dads, as parents, we get caught up in like the hoopla of, I got to take it to the Trolls experience, or I got to take them. Yeah. I got to take my boy to Yankee Stadium, to the Lego store and ball out. And it's like, kids don't care, man. Like my daughter, West is 9 months. West is fine with a cardboard box.
Yo, right? They love those cardboard boxes.
They love them, man. That is garbage. You are playing with garbage. Okay. I'm just letting you know. But like the idea that like, and I get it, because some of that is also a part of, it's us feeling like we missed out, especially if you come from where you and I come from, where it's like, Maybe you didn't get to have all the things, and now you're in the space where maybe you can give your child the things that you didn't have. But children don't need that. Like, we create the experiences that our children long for. So if your child, if you're growing out of control, that's great. But that's what your child is going to be accustomed to. If your child is accustomed to, like, yo, my dad is here for an hour, giving me love, giving me attention, because that's what kids want. They want your attention. They don't want you on your phone. They don't want you on your computer. Now, granted, things happen, but that hour, that day makes a difference, because that time is something that allows you to fortify and build a relationship over time, you know, because it's different for us as dads. We don't get to, I mean, if you identify as a father, right? So then, and you are a man who identifies as a father. So then part of that is then you don't carry a child in your womb, right? There's not that level of connection that the mother gets, you don't necessarily get to have. There are other ways in which we get to try to replicate that, like talking to the belly and all these other things. But at the end of the day, it really becomes up to us to create opportunities for more time to be spent, more quality time to be spent. And that's what's going to allow for a fruitful relationship to develop.
Yeah, I like that, because, you know, sometimes I feel like, you know, when I was doing the 9-to-5 thing, I felt like I didn't have time to be there with the kids or enough time. Mm-hmm. And it was like, nah, mm-hmm. like even those weekends that I had with them, it was enough. Like, not that it's old, mm-hmm. it's ever enough, but it was like, yo, it was good. Mm-hmm. Like, we gave them some experiences, yeah, exactly. and all of that. And then now is, you know, I'm just in a different spot where now I could have more time with them, but I don't see it changing. You know what I mean? Like, it's like 2 hours mm-hmm. or a whole week. I'm still mm-hmm. giving them all of me. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And they're perceptive. Like, kids know, like, kids read energy, you know, kids understand, like, we don't give our children enough credit. Yeah. Like, they, like, our children can feel when something is off, when we're sad, when we're, and I think part of the work for me as a parent and as a father has been trying to also give room for my children to be expressive in that way. You know, Lila is a very sensitive being. And so for me, it's like the old school ways of, like, you know, don't cry, or you better stop crying, I'm going to give you something to cry about. Like, that don't jive with me. That's not the space I want to raise my daughter or my daughters in. Mm-hmm. So the work for me and for us has been trying to create an environment where they feel safe enough to share and be in their feelings, recognizing that they're very aware when things are shifting. So, like, even now with Lila being in Houston, Lila talks about how much she misses New York. Lila would try to stay on the phone longer because she doesn't want to get off the phone. It's those little things that tell me, A, that she misses her father physically, like seeing me, which it sucks, but it also makes you feel good a little bit, because it's like, okay, we've created a relationship in which,
like, I'm part of this. I'm part of this. I add value.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jen. Exactly. I add value to her life. And so that means something to her. So even when she's getting caught up during the day, because there's times when Lila doesn't really want to talk to me. You know, she's in ballet. And granted, she's not even 5 yet, but, like, she's doing things. She has, like, piano classes. She has stuff that she enjoys. And she's with her friend. And so she may not even just talk. She might be like, Daddy, I have to go. And she just hang up the phone. But it's part of that is, like, having to understand that my child is developing her own kind of sense of independence. And that's important for her. But what's also important is her feeling like she can call her father and we can talk for 30 minutes about nothing. And I think sometimes we feel like it has to be impactful. We have to create a moment. And we don't. The moment is already there. And once we have the time with them, that's the moment. We don't have to do anything extra. The extra stuff is great. The trips, the gifts, all that. The kids want love. When they get a little older, it's different.
Then it changes up.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But, like, you know, this early stage, man, it's all about love and attention.
Yo, let's talk about you, bro. Like, you talked about love, attention, emotions, right? How did you feel? And we're gonna get personal, bro. If you don't want it, you know, you tell me stop. Let's talk about the emotional side, man. You know, your oldest, the mother of your oldest tells you, hey, we're moving to Houston.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that mentally, bro? Like, were you ready to break something? And how did you not break something? Sure. You know what I mean? Like, how did for you? Sure. Can you guide us through that?
So, you know, I'll keep it
nice, PG. Because we got no beef. We don't want no beef.
Because I love her mom immensely. But I mean, we'd had conversations, James, about this before. Like, you know, at this point, so I'll just kind of rewind back to 2019. You know, I find out that I'm going to be having a second child with my now partner. We're excited about it. I have a conversation with Lila's mom about it. Lila's mom is super supportive about it. I was a little nervous about it. because we had just finally gotten to a place of like a really good, solid communication, relationship, and also like friendship. And so I was worried like this is going to be really rock the boat. But it didn't, and it was great. But we had been talking about her potentially moving to Houston because she wants to be a lawyer. And so she has a lot of family out in Houston. It made more sense for her potentially to move out there where there was going to be more opportunity, more support. Because really in New York, like even just financially, it's really neat. You know, her father was there to support, like her father supporting her for sure. But because her father also lives in New York. But a lot of that weight bore on me, especially while she was in school. Like there were times when Lila wasn't staying with me. Mm-hmm. Like by all intents and purposes, mother was the custodial parent, but I took care of Lila a large portion of the time because I'd pick her up from daycare and then I'd be with her at her mother's house until her mother came back from school, whatever time that might be. And then I would head back home. And this is when I was still in the Bronx. So like I wouldn't get back home. I would leave my house at like 8 o'clock and I wouldn't get back home normally until like 11 PM at night.
Wow.
And that's not including like my 9-to-5 work, my career, like, you know what I do outside of my 9-to-5 stuff. So like, and granted, I'm way more busy now than I was then, but I was still doing a lot of the other stuff.
Yeah. And so it takes its toll. It takes its toll on you anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But towards the end of the year, it felt like it came out of nowhere. She was like, listen, I'm talking to my parents, I'm talking to my mom, and I think me and Lala are going to move to Houston. My immediate thought was like, Lala ain't got to go. You can go.
Yeah.
Lala ain't got to go nowhere. Because I mean, to be transparent, Lala, like I'm the more emotional parent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her mom is definitely more the disciplinarian in that regard. Like I'm really like Lila's safety, emotional safety net. Like I had the conversations with her about her feelings, her emotions, processing that kind of stuff, you know, and her mother does a wonderful job of taking care of like a lot of the other things, you know what I'm saying? Like the day to day stuff, especially now with her in Houston. Before it was a lot more balanced because we were in the same city.
Mm-hmm.
But when she had, I mean, there was some crying on my part involved. Yeah. There was some yelling to be completely fair. Like, cause it just felt sudden. It felt sudden. It didn't make sense to me. I didn't like it. But I also, for me also was like, long term, you know, like for me, it's always been important to like look at long, like what's the long game here?
Yeah.
And the long game for me, like, it's something I learned from a good friend of mine. Her therapist actually told her this, and what the therapist told her was like, we're not raising kids, we're raising adults.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like our kids are going to grow up. They're going to be Jameses and Joels one day. You know. And so with that being said, it's, my relationship with Lila's mom is not this relationship in just this moment. Like I have, I'm for me, it's parent. It's like baseball. Like I'm thinking ahead of what this parenting relationship, what I want it to look like. And so for that, it's like I don't think we need to go to court for something like this because people were asking like, "Yo, you're afraid she's gonna try to keep you away from the kids? She moving?" I was like,
wait, so
doing what she feels like you
skipped court in the beginning and after she moved also?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So that's due to the relationship that you guys have formed, which is,
yeah, exactly.
Which is spectacular.
And to be honest, there were times where like I wanted to, because it felt like we were bumping heads a lot. And this is maybe like in the first 2 years or so. And like, I was concerned about my parenting privileges, and not necessarily saying like she was trying to do things to upend that, but it was becoming difficult for me to move freely. It felt like as a parent, and coexist in a healthy co-parenting relationship. And I wasn't doing great either. You know what I'm saying? Like there were things that I could have done differently and better in order to make her feel safer and make her feel more secure in her role as a parent that I wasn't doing. I was doing a shitty job of, to be honest, at the time. We both were.
Yeah.
But for me, court was always going to be the last resort. And part of that is because I recognized that there was an opportunity. And to your point, you're right, because even in the midst of the difficulties, I could still see that there was work. Like we were trying to work, even though we were failing at it. It felt like there was glimmers of like, oh, okay, I think we're not seeing eye to eye, but I think there's a potential for that to happen. But it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen in a year or 2 years. It took about 2.5 years.
Yeah, both were playing the long game, which is great.
Yeah. And I mean, unfortunately, sometimes that's not always the case. But I think we rush to judgment sometimes, as opposed to really sitting back and saying, okay, let me not think with my emotions. Because if I thought emotionally, man, bro, listen, this would have been a whole different kind of conversation, I think.
Yeah, the Bronx I got turned up.
Like, nah, man, fuck this shit. Now you ain't going nowhere. And it's like, nah, but like, she has autonomy, you know. And if Lila, when Lila gets older, if Lila wants to come back, I mean, I want my daughter here now. I want Lila here every single day of the week, you know. But I recognize that she's also happy in Houston right now. She has space. She has the house. It's great. It's good for what it is for right now. We both agree that this is not necessarily permanent. You know, she's going to law school. You know, she wants to figure this out, and then we're going to revisit this again. And so for me, it was like, I can manage that. I can deal with that. Because it's harder on me than it is on her. Lila is fine. You know, I think a lot of the things that we get upset about and frazzled about has less to do about the child than more to do with us. Because the children generally aren't, like, they don't feel the effects of it. They don't see it. They might see it in the ways that we respond in that moment, but Lila is fine. Now, if I was the parent that was like, nah, you need to come home, and your mom, what is your mama doing? Like, if I was talking all wild and reckless in front of her and to her, then that would create the kind of tension that would essentially affect the child, but we're not doing that. So Lila doesn't know, like, the struggles and the conversations that Dottie, her mother and I had. She has no clue in them. You know, like, that's our job as parents, to keep her protected from that. You know, in another era, when she's older, this would have happened. That probably would have been a different conversation. But she was young, so there was no, you know, like, gauging it by what makes the most sense right now in this moment, as opposed to responding and reacting emotionally.
So how do you keep the rough moments of tension? Like, how do you keep them from blowing up? Right? Like, how do you, as the father, like, how do you? Like, there has to be a time when you're with her, talking to her, and it's like something in your head pops where you're like, oh my goodness, like, I need to tell her mom this, right? Because it's something I don't like, but I can't do it through her. I got to do this privately. Like, how do you keep that from blowing up? You know what I mean?
Well, I think part of that is because I've done that, and it hasn't worked.
So you've blown up before. Like, so you've had the traditional, whatever. And then the next day you were probably like, oh shit.
No, I mean, I shared this on the podcast. Like, at one point I told her, like, I basically told her to fuck herself. Like, I told her to jump out of a window, fuck you. Like, it was I had a whole blackout moment, slammed the door. Like,
so it wasn't perfect. It wasn't perfect.
Yeah. There's a lot of imperfect times that we had. And I think, you know, forgiveness was in practice. There was a point where we weren't even talking to each other unless it was about Lila. Like, and that happened after that really big blowout I just mentioned to you. But it took a lot of failure to be like, this is not working. Like, we keep doing this thing, and this thing is not yielding any sort of results. But when we do this, oh, this works. Oh, and, like, for me, the pivot, and, you know, if I'm being, you know, I think Buddhism has played a role in that. And, like, for some folks, that might be whatever other faith they choose. But for me, Buddhism is really about coming back to self, detaching ourselves from, like, pain and suffering. And in order to do that, what we have to recognize is that all of this is, like, temporary. Mm-hmm. And so with that, I get the opportunity to say, okay, I had a blow up. I responded poorly. How can I show up in a way that's different? And how can I be honest with who I am? Because who I am in that moment is not my truest self. We tend to think that angry laugh, it doesn't mean that feeling that we express is inaccurate, but attaching ourselves to that as us as a person is where we go wrong. Because, like, that was me being angry, but that doesn't mean I'm an angry person. And so we tend to look at that behavior as the output of who we are. And it's not. It's just an expression of ourselves in that moment. And that's what Buddhism taught me. And so part of that was like, okay, me as myself, I'm trying to be as loving, as intentional as possible. And in those moments, I'm not intentional. In those moments, I'm trying to get an outcome. I'm trying to control the direction of an outcome, as opposed to being like, okay, you know, this is not the space. This is not the conversation. Like, last night we were having a maybe 2 nights ago, we weren't really having a conversation, but I saw something that I didn't like. And it wasn't big, and it's something I'm going to bring up to her, but we've had an argument before about me calling her out on something in front of Lila. And so she checked me on it. And so after that, I didn't do it anymore. You know what I'm saying? And part of that is like open communication, respect, listening to each other, but having a co-parent who's going to tell you the truth and tell you, like, because what we tend to do, especially as men, is we don't voice our issues. And then you'll voice the issue after it's happened 2,000 times, and then you blow up, and it's a whole big deal. And some of that is not even because of the co-parent or our partner. It's because of some trauma that happened 20 years ago with our mom and our dad that we haven't resolved yet.
Yeah, you know, got like, that built-up tension in there.
Yeah, therapy, man, or go to the gym. Do something, you know. But part of that is like we have to work through our trauma, too, because a lot of the times we bring our trauma into the situations and unrecognized trauma, unhealed trauma. And that shows up in the way that we parent. That shows up in the way that we co-parent with our partners or loved ones or family members, whomever, you know. And it's like part of that, if we're doing the work, we get to see ourselves in those moments and respond appropriately as opposed to inappropriately, which is responding out of anger in order to hurt or harm another person to make them feel mad about themselves.
And I think all of that still boils down to you saying, you know, I want to be a part of my daughter's life. I want to show her how a woman should be treated, right? And how a man should act. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where it's like you got to take a step back. And I'm sure in the beginning, I don't think we could fault any father, right? That in the beginning or even in a long-term co-parenting situation where they might lose it for a second. You know what I mean? Like this is a tough situation. Like it's easy, but it's not easy either. Like it's like there's moments where you got to be questioning like, yo, will I see her again? Will I see my daughter again? Will I see my son again? Will she try to play me? You know what I mean? Like those are tough moments. So we should expect people to lose it once in a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think part of that is like, wait, see, it's funny things, we're human beings. And so like no one is without fault. No one is without like emotions. You know, like we tend to spin these conversations in a way that's like, women are dramatic. Women are emotions. Like, nah, we emotional too.
Yeah,
like,
what did you do to trigger it? like in all honesty, like, what did you do? Like, sometimes it's our fault. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, and that's okay. And, like, accountability. You know what I'm saying? The things I've been trying to teach my especially Lila, because Wes is a little too young for that yet. But, like, the idea of autonomy, right? So I'll give you an example. Last year, Lila and I were outside. We were walking. She had an apple. She loves apples. She was eating an apple, but she was eating it in a way I've never really seen someone eat an apple before. It was just weird to me. And I was getting ready to tell her that's not the right way to eat an apple. That's what I was getting ready to tell her. I started saying that, then I stopped myself, and I was like, eat the apple however you want. Because that's what autonomy looks like, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have say-so in how you show up in the world, regardless of how big or how small it is. It's not my job as your father. It's definitely not my job as a man to try to dictate what is right or wrong for you. And I think especially with little girls, for dads it's really easy to be like, don't wear that, don't do that, don't say that. And it's like, to me, that falls in the same space of respectability politics when we talk about when we tell black kids or black teenagers to like pick their pants up, don't wear a hoodie during at night, don't do this. It's like, you're still getting shot by the police. Like it's not about us trying to police the behaviors of our people. It's about ensuring that those who are abusers, those who are trying to victimize or find ways to hurt or harm the people we care about, it's about teaching those people how to be appropriate. You know what I'm saying? And so part of the work for me is like telling my daughter, like, I don't want no man to tell my daughter what she can't wear. Like, I don't care if it's a boyfriend, but like, that's not how that works. And so for me, it boils back down to ensuring that there's space for everyone to like feel their emotions, right? Like to your point, where men get to feel their emotions, women get to feel their emotions, and we also get to hold ourselves and other people accountable for how they make us feel, you know. And that the reason I brought up the autonomy portion of that is like, if your partner's a woman, she's crying, and you may have said something to create that tension, accountability says, I get to own that. Autonomy also gets to say that she has the right to cry in that moment because that's what she's feeling. Mm. And so the same rules apply for men. we tend to, unfortunately, not allow that to happen to us as men. Men, because we do it to each other, and then sometimes women are the like purveyors of that, where because you're a man, you're supposed to act a certain way, you're supposed to show up a certain way, you're not supposed to do or supposed to do certain things. And it's like these gender norms are restricting us from being our total free selves. And by free selves, I mean folks who get to just be with whomever they are as far as their emotions are concerned. That's why you got so many crazy people walking around. Yeah, just be. Like, I'm going to let you be who you are without trying to control that. But when we try to control how people show up, whether it be our partners, our co-parents, our children, that's when we fail. That's when we struggle. We wonder, like, why we're having issues is because we're trying to control and manipulate a situation into something that it's not.
Yeah, and this, it seems to me like with co-parenting, it seems like if you're not together, it's almost like a negotiation. It almost feels like I hate to put it this way, but it feels like a business transaction, right? Where it's like, this is the way we're going to talk to each other. This is how we're going to communicate. And then this is how we're going to schedule things, right? Like, this is like for you, like, like now your daughter's in Texas, right? How are you going to start scheduling, you know, birthdays, Christmas, that has to be something that you think about. Not constantly, but I'm sure you thought about, like, yo, what? I better get at least one birthday. You know what I mean? Like, the next birthday, at least. Like, how do you do that?
Well, I mean, honestly, James, and I'll tell you this. I don't think it's that different than, like, when, you know, because you have in-laws, right?
Yeah. So,
like, holidays, right? It's not that different. I think we tend to feel like it is. And to a certain extent, it's true. But, like, Lila takes priority. Our children take priority. So, like, for her birthday, we're flying down. I'm going to be there for her birthday. Maybe next year she'll be in New York for her birthday. You know what I'm saying? But like we're not clinging to the only holiday that's generally not up for grabs is Christmas. Like Christmas for her family is a super big deal for them. So it's either me probably going to Houston or me just not spending time with my daughter for Christmas.
And I think you're cool with that because of the respect level. The respect of, yo, like, we're doing this a certain way. If that means something really special to your side, it might not mean the same for me, so y'all can have that. You know what I mean? Like, we good.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also, though, too, James, it's like me trusting the process. I almost would say, like, it's just as much about the respect that we have for each other, but me also not, I don't gripe about a lot, if anything, man. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not a lot of that's going to get to me because I recognize my role as a father to that child.
Yeah.
Like, we solid. So there's nothing that's going to interrupt that unless I allow that to happen. And me not spending a Christmas, that might be, that's a conversation to visit when Lila is older, right? Like, when she has a more of a voice and she can be like, Daddy, I want you here for Christmas. And we weren't here last year, and that made me sad, right? She's not the age where she can properly voice that in a way that's like, okay, this is exactly how she feels, you know? And so that becomes a conversation. That's what she says, and that's something we will visit. But I'm not stuck to a way in which I'm supposed to show up. Like, I know I'm showing up exactly how I'm supposed to for my child, and I see it. I see it in the love that I give, and see it in the love that I receive from her. So I'm not really worried about my position, because again, I think a lot of that is the weight that we as parents put on things, like little stuff. Anything about birthday parties, right? Like 1-year-old birthday parties. Babies, I mean, we're making memories. Yeah, but babies, they don't remember that.
They don't remember the big cake. They don't remember the big cake and the fiestas.
Yeah, that's for us. That's for other people to feel like, because people want to see us celebrating our child, and it's disappointment if we're not doing that. But that's not for the kids. Maybe later on when they can look back at pictures, and it is, it's wonderful. But a lot of the stuff that I think we hold, we put our weight against, we get frustrated about, is about us. It's about us as adults feeling the type of way. So, like, for us, when we're splitting up and divvying up the time, it's scheduled, but I'm also fluid in that regard. Like, things happen. So if I don't talk to Lila for 3 days, like, Dottie might send me a picture. I know that Dottie is working. I know she's working all day, right? Like, Lila's mom. She's working all day. She's coming. She's picking her up from school. Lila's in classes. So, like, I might not get to talk to Lila until later that night. I might have just had a really long day at work. We just put Wes to bed, my other daughter. And so it's late. By the time she calls, I might be asleep. Now, I could be mad about that, but why?
Yeah. That's just the way the day went.
Right. And I think sometimes we, because of the trauma, because of the issues maybe we've had with the person, it's easy to look, because there was a point in time where definitely, where I, if that would have happened, that would have been an argument. And I also think, though, that was because Lila was younger. I still felt I wasn't as confident that I was doing everything. And I, even though I was, it was feeling like I wasn't doing everything that I could for my child, you know? And so like that created tension, because anytime I felt like I quote unquote missed out on a call or I couldn't make something for whatever reason, it was like me wanting to blame somebody for it, you know, as opposed to now where it's like, this is life, man. Like,
but yeah, where's the solution? Where's the solution, right?
Right.
It's more like, this happened. Yeah. Instead of dwelling on what could have happened, let's find that solution. Maybe it's a phone call in the next 5 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, if it ain't gonna happen in the next 5 minutes, can it happen tomorrow morning? This is important, because I think the bargaining that you brought up earlier, James, I think that's relevant to everyone. Like, I tell folks, I wish more people operated within a co-parenting model, where it's like, it forces you to create a schedule for yourself and for your children so that it's okay. What I benefited from the most, I felt like, was knowing I was going to have time alone with just Lila. It was just going to be me and her. And I think parents benefit from that. I think dads, especially if you're a girl dad, where it's like, oh, I have dedicated time this day or these days where it's just me and the kid. This is me and my child hanging out. This is not both parents. It's just us doing our own thing. That also means mom gets to have time for herself to do whatever she wants to do. And us as parents proactively doing that for each other. You know, like I take walks with Wes. I try to on the days I'm not in the office, and then trying to take walks with her in the afternoon. It's getting a little cold. It's more difficult. But I do that, A, because I just love walking with my daughter. I love walking. But also it's an opportunity for being my partner to just... She wants to nap, she wants to text, she wants to take a shower, whatever she wants to do. Like, the goal is to create space and opportunity for us to be who we are outside of just being parents. Because we get so caught up in this, like, we're parents, but, like, co-parenting allows you to do that. Because now you're saying, it's okay to build out a schedule for however you're going to look at, however you're going to break out the week. Because that means we're just allotting time to the things that matter to us in a way that's proactive, you know?
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned something really good earlier where you said, you know, like missing a call or calling and she doesn't really want to speak to you. Like, your daughter doesn't want to speak to you. How do you as a dad, don't tell her, yo, I just called you. You better talk to me right now. I don't want to wait till tomorrow. You better talk to me now.
I mean, for me, in my head, dude, that's exactly how I'm feeling, bro. But I'm trying to teach her autonomy.
Yeah.
What I'm really trying to teach her is that you, as a girl who's going to grow up to be a woman, gets to say, I don't feel like doing this right now. I know I'm your father, but I'm still a human being, just like you. You are a human being who has feelings, who has thoughts, who has ideas. And so I also don't take it personal. Like, you know, I think sometimes it's easy to feel like our children don't have lives because we take them to school. But those little people, man, have personalities. They have feelings. They have thoughts. They have things that they want to do. And some of those things don't involve us all the time.
Yeah.
And having to be okay with that, because I want her to grow up to feel like she's an individual, and really an individual who has a man in her life who allows her to show up in the ways that she wants to. So that no brother can come up to her, or woman, whatever she decides to do. But no one can come up to her and like try to tell her that she has to make time. I mean, I think about friendships now, adult friendships, where it's like, you ain't text me back in 2 days, or I ain't hear from you. It's like, because I'm busy.
Yeah.
Like, what's the difference? And for me, I don't think there's any difference between that and my child. Like, my child, who I'm like, I want you to feel like I can call you and be like, hey, daddy, I'm doing something right now. Or I don't want to talk. And me not trying to force her to talk because she doesn't want to. It's the same way how we grew up. If someone wanted to give you a hug, you had to give them a hug. And generally, our parents would tell us, go give them a hug. It's disrespectful not to. Yeah. Man, listen, My child don't want to give you a hug. I ain't gonna make it do it.
You're not gonna do that's it. They don't want to give you the handshake.
Yeah, it's
COVID anyway, yo.
Exactly. Like, listen, it's her. It's wanting my children to have autonomy over their feelings and over their bodies, especially as Black girls, man. Like, wanting them to understand that they have a say so, and who gets to touch them, who doesn't. You know, who gets to say hi to them, who doesn't. You know, like, they don't owe us. They don't. This could be the children. I don't necessarily think they owe us anything.
No, that's real. That's real. I know she's coming for you. So I'm gonna ask you another hard question, man. But I think you're doing really well with it. You moved on, bro. How hard was it to move on and start another family? And how hard is it to possibly see her move on and start another family? Like, is that something that I'm pretty sure in the beginning was kind of awkward, but now, you know, is it who cares?
Yeah, it's definitely who cares, man. I think our situation, you know, we had been separated before Lila was even born.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's I don't want to get it, I'm scratching the surface a little bit, but it's something I've been talking a lot about lately, and that's grief. And we tend to talk about grief as a thing that we do when people die, which is accurate. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also a grief that comes, like, this sense of loss. Like, if this pandemic has taught us anything, we get to grieve over a lot of different things outside of just the loss of a life. Like, you can grieve the loss of a job. You can grieve the loss of a relationship. You can grieve the loss of an opportunity. Like, these things can feel heavy. They can feel sorrowful. And I think, with us, with myself and Lila's mom, what it came to was we never really got the opportunity or gave ourselves the opportunity to grieve a couple of things: the ending of our partnership, and then also grieving the end of an era for us, because we were now parents. There's no going back. Like, and being able to grieve the notion that we no longer really have all the freedoms that we used to have, where we can go anywhere we want to, we can do anything we want to, say anything we want to in front of anybody, because we had no real responsibilities outside of bills and rent. And so we never really grieved that. And so a large portion of the early parts of our co-parenting relationship were us fighting each other, because I don't think we ever gave ourselves space to heal. But because of that, like, it took such a long time, but because of that gap, this time of us not being together, I was paying attention to the pacing and timing of it. And so part of it was, like, I knew when it was inappropriate, or like when I knew it was going to be difficult to be in a relationship, and being able to, I knew it was more open when she started kind of talking to me about someone she was talking to, because then that let me know that she had moved into a space where she felt comfortable telling me those kinds of things. And then that was a signal to me, like, okay, I can potentially start dating again and tell her about it.
It's like she opened the door. It's like the door was open now. Now I can do me, and there shouldn't be any issues now.
Right. And because we're communicating, and she was even hesitant to tell me at first. And I never understood that, because I don't think I ever created energy that made her feel like I would have felt a type of way. But I think generally speaking, men and women dynamics tell us that if their former significant other or the person that you used to have a relationship with, who you also have children with, is not dating, TV tells us that's an issue. Media tells us that's an issue. I think we tend to bring that energy into the space, as opposed to holistically looking at the relationship we're having with the co-parent and going, is this person in a healthy enough space to recognize that I have a life that lives outside of me being a parent, and can we have conversations about that? And we were there. And so it's been nothing but love, man. Like, I was a little hesitant, of course, same as she was, and scared to talk about it. But we're in a place now, man, where it's healthy, it's open. We you know, like, they talk to each other. You know, it
took a while.
It took a while.
Some effort.
And I think that's the thing, man. It's communication.
It's almost it's almost like there's no way she could be good with you moving forward unless y'all good. Like, unless y'all have the that relationship, the way, you know, that relationship where it's like, yo, I don't want you for nothing more than, you know, co-parenting, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even know how to phrase it, right? Like, that's all we need to be focused on. So it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay for you to move on because I respect you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head, man. I think a lot of what, and I think this also comes back again to communication and honesty, because I think a lot of folks, unfortunately, are not honest with themselves. You know, I think 99, and this might be, I might be reaching, but I think 99.9% of the issues that co-parents run into have nothing to do with the parenting of a child. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is like the stuff that we haven't processed, the stuff that we're not saying to a person, whether there are feelings for a person that still exists, whether you dislike a person and you don't want to be friends with them and you only want to be co-parents with them and the other person feels differently, but no one is talking about it. People are kind of acting out in different ways without actually talking about the issue. And I think the more we can be open and honest and respectful of each other, the easier this all becomes, man, for real.
I love it, bro. I love it. You know what? One last question to end it on a real positive note, man. Like, what's something that you have done the last week or maybe the last 2 weeks that your child has done or that you have done that you've said, damn, fatherhood is lit, man. Like, what has popped up?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. Yesterday, Lila and I were doing math. You know, like she was asking me it started the day before and it continued into yesterday. But day before yesterday, she was like, "What's 2 plus 2?" She told me what 2 plus 2 was. She said 2 plus 2 was like, she said 2 plus 2 was 22. And clearly, I'm like, okay, no, I appreciate what you're doing because I see what you're doing. You're just putting the 2 and 2 together. But like we were FaceTiming, so I was drawing pictures for her, and it was like and I remember a young Lila whose attention span was super short, and how trying to communicate numbers to her was kind of difficult, as opposed to now where it's like I just drew 2 lines, and it's like, okay, how many lines do you see here? And she was like, 2, and then I like hit like then I drew 2 more lines, and I was like, how many lines do you see here? And she was like, 4. Okay, so I was like, you see these two, like, these 2 lines here plus these 2 lines here equals how many lines? And then, so it was like, we kind of kept doing that. And it was like, it was impressive just to see, see how happy she got from getting something right. But then also how quickly she was able to understand it and recognize that my daughter is growing. You know, she wasn't, if we'd have tried this a year ago, the results probably would have been a little different, you know? So it was just really cool to see, man.
Nah, the growth is real, man, and it's a blessing. I know what it is, man. You know, with my 3 kids doing this remote stuff, it's like, wow. Like, every day I get to see them grow a little bit more, and it's like, holy crap. Like, there's nothing better than this, man. So what I know you got your book out there, man. I know you got your book, a book about things I will tell my daughter. What else you got going, bro? Like, how can people reach you? Like, I know you've been killing it on Twitter right now. You my Twitter homie right now. getting billboards all over Manhattan on Twitter. Come on, man. Let's talk our shit real quick right now. This dude got a billboard with his tweets up. Come on, man. Only in New York City, man. Come on.
Only in New York City, man. It was Times Square, man. That was shout out to Twitter.
That's huge coming from where we come from, bro.
man. You know, like, I don't take it lightly, man. But, you know, working on there's a content series that I have, a monthly interview series that I'm hosting with the Workspace Ethos Club. I actually have I'm sitting down with a designer tomorrow by the name of Deanna. And then, like, we do that monthly. You know, I'm live streaming a show with my man, Arthur Lewis, from Rockwood Music Hall. You know, he's going to be doing the hip-hop singer-songwriter thing this upcoming Monday, November 2nd. You know, working on my essay collection, you know. So once that's done, shopping out to major publishers and we'll see what happens with that.
So it's round 2. You know, it's round 2 for a book.
Yeah, man. Congrats. Really round 3, because it's after a book about things I'll tell my daughter, Bottle Cap Press, also published, got my second book, God With Durex, too, which is essentially just a book of like my Twitter affirmation put together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, just, you know, just trying to continue to spread light and love. Twitter, Instagram, JOEL, a.k.a. M-A-G, Ojoa, a.k.a. Mad. For those that are wondering, Mad used to be my rat name. That was the rat name my mom hated. But, yeah, man, just trying to work, man, just trying to continue to dismantle systems, continue to try to help people get free, man, and using my art to do that.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I mean, I you're very accessible, bro, especially with Twitter and Instagram, and people can get their gems on a daily. So thank you, bro. Thank you so much.
That's the goal, homie. You know, and I appreciate you, man.
Yo, thank you so much for taking time to be here, man. I know you back in Brooklyn now. You left the Bronx, man. You left us, but that's okay. I left us too, so it's okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly, man. Yeah, you left too, brother. You know, I was just in the Bronx, so, man, this weekend to see my mama, man. So.
Same, likewise.
I try to go out there at least. Yeah, you know, I try to be out there at least every two weeks or so, man, to check on the family, make sure everybody's here.
Yeah, that, likewise, man. Funny thing, man. I go every 2 weeks or so just to get a haircut or a shape up. I call it that I'm doing that, but I'm really going to see my parents. give me a reason to be back in the hood. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly, man. And that kind of stuff is important, man, I think. You know, especially for me as an artist, and I know for you, and I know you can relate to this, but there's something about, like I say, grounding. You know, when you kind of go back to the old stomping grounds and see folks, man, it's a reminder to where we came from and where we're going.
Yes, and that's very, very important, man. So thank you so much for your time, man. I know you're going back on daddy duty time. I know I'm doing the same. I'm about to feed these kids. You know, they snack in for real. So thank you for your time, man, for real. I truly appreciate it.
Same, James. I appreciate you, brother. Thank you, man.
Thank you. To the community, life isn't over when you and your soulmate decide to break it off. It becomes modified and sometimes even becomes better. The child is the most important part of life. Joel just talked to us about co-parenting, and although it always isn't easy, it's a must. Go handle your business like a real one. Fatherhood is lit.